Thank you for tuning in to the Essential Church Podcast, a church where we focus on restoration over denomination. If you're in the Virginia Beach area and would like to find out more about Essential Church, visit our webpage at essentialchurch.com.
Remember back when that movie came out, I was actually working for the Super Bowl, and one of the guys I was working with was in that movie, and it was frustrating. It was kind of neat, because on the one hand, you know, we were hearing about what's going on in the movie. On the other hand, it was frustrating, because the guy that was in the movie would never show up for work with us at the Super Bowl, and so all of his responsibilities kept getting dumped in my lap. But so I kind of had this love-hate affair with the movie, because like on the one hand, I knew a lot about the background of it, and we got to see a lot of the cast and whatnot. On the other hand, every time I see him in the movie, I'm like, yeah, that's where you were when you should have been helping me out. And it's funny that the movie is about teamwork. If you don't know the background of the movie, with football, it's an odd sport. I mean, it is, I would say it is the ultimate team sport. It is just so complicated of a sport. I remember being in New Zealand trying to explain to some New Zealanders how the game is played. I'm actually sitting there watching the Super Bowl. This will come back around later on Super Bowl Monday, because there are, like, right now it's Monday afternoon for them right now. It's kind of weird. And so I'm sitting there Monday afternoon watching the Super Bowl, trying to explain to these people what's going on. And I'm like, you've never seen a football game before? Like, no, no. I'm like, what world do you live in? And this is a completely foreign place. So trying to explain it to them. And the thing about football is just so complex. And we have star players, and you'll even see them promote games. Like it's Cam Newton versus Peyton Manning in the Super Bowl. Not really. I mean, there's a lot of other people out there, right? I mean, it doesn't really matter. I mean, Peyton Manning didn't win that game, did he? I mean, all he did was basically barely manage the thing and hand off the ball and throw about six passes. I mean, that's really all he did. Yet we want to, like, lift up this one person. And so in the movie, what happens is this one player kind of gets elevated up and gets a big ego, and they start to lose when all that happens. And so the coach kind of comes back around to him and he says, listen, it's all about teamwork. You have to come together in the end, because if you don't come together, you'll realize this really is a team sport, and one person can't go out there and win this game. We either win as a team or we will all fail as individuals. And when we kind of, as we're wrapping up this series through David's life, the thing I've been struggling with and trying to, like, hammer home is that David was a very unique guy, but in the end, David was what? Just like you. He was just like me. He was just like us. And the thing is, we even after we've read through the whole story, we've kind of looked at his highs and his lows. I think there's been times where you can see, yeah, David was just like me, because before there was King David, there was just shepherd boy David. There was left out and forgotten David. There was Aaron cheese boy David. There was boy who's outmatched and outgunned in a fight, so we thought David and Goliath David. And then there was like the Kenny G David who just sort of played the harp, and DJ David, whatever he was doing there on the side for Saul to help him feel better. And then there was outlaw David and outcast David. And then eventually there was king to be David, and there was King David. And then there was the failure David. And then there was the redeemed David. And then there was the outlaw again David. And then there was the redeemed once again David. And then there was the arrogant David. And then there was the humble David. And then there was just David. And all along the way, before we sort of move away from the story of David, we've been talking about how in David's life, so you could see him rise and fall based on the people he had around him. And when he had good friends in his life, like Jonathan, who would strengthen his hand in the Lord, he would make good choices. And when he didn't have good friends in his life, he would make really bad choices. But even more so, when you look at his life, there's so much of his life that we sort of skipped over in this series. And the only time I really talked about it was if you were here on Hurricane Thursday night, or if you stayed at home and watched the service, if you had power from that week, I talked a little bit about that sort of interim period of sort of king yet to be David. And this is where he spent like 14 or some odd years like as a king in waiting, waiting to become king. And it was along that time that we sort of see what happened and what made him become king. And if you go over to 1 Chronicles chapter 12, we see that David, it wasn't a solo act. He became King David because of the people that came around him, because of the teamwork and the unity that surrounded him. The turning point for him was all these people were coming around him, and he had been anointed by God, but it wasn't until he was accepted by the people and lifted up by the people that he really became the king. And so we see this in 1 Chronicles chapter 12, the people who are gathered around him. And it says, these were the men who came to David at Ziklag, while he was banished from the presence of Saul, son of Kish. Now, keep in mind, this is before it was like popular and fashionable to be there. This is sort of on the rise up. This is not once he's on top. This is sort of when he's still an outlaw. And it says, and among them were warriors who helped him battle. They were armed with bows and were able to shoot arrows and the sling stones, right-handed or left-handed. They were relatives of Saul from the tribe of Benjamin, even. Then it goes on down, verse 8. Some Gadites defected to David and at his stronghold in the wilderness, and they were brave warriors, ready for battle and able to handle the sword and the spear. And their faces were like the faces of lions, and they were swift as gazelles in the mountains. And you kind of wonder, like, why so many unique details? Why not just say there were some people who gathered around them? What's with all this right-handed, left-hand, swords, spears, faces like lions? Why give all these details to it? And he's trying to tell you that it took all kinds of people and some very unique kinds of people to come around David for him to become the David that became the hero, the champion of Israel. It wasn't David all by himself. It was these unique people who came around him who fed to this. And if you look through it, it says they could wield a sword with their right hand or their left hand. And I always, whenever I got to play ping pong with somebody, I play left-handed a lot. And it goes back to when I did a lot of youth ministry. When you play against youth who've never really played ping pong, but you're trying to just kind of build a relationship with them, sometimes, you know, playing some sort of sport. Bear with me on the ping pong idea, but it's indoors and it's there in the youth room a lot of times. A lot of youth rooms have ping pong tables, and so I just started playing left-handed just so I could sort of be at their skill level. The problem is I played so much and did so many years of youth ministry, I got pretty decent with the left-handed, even though I'm not left-handed. And so now I routinely, whenever I play somebody I don't know, I always play them first left-handed. And so several years back, Alex and I were walking around the building when he was kind of new here, and we came across, we used to have a ping pong table back there, and Alex was like, "Hey, you ever play?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I've played some ping pong." And it's like, "You?" And he goes, "Well, right now I think I'm king of the hill here at the church." I said, "Why is that?" He goes, "Well, Pastor Bobby and I come back here a few times, and he has yet to take me. Yeah, you know, he'll get a game here and there, but, you know." I'm like, "Oh, okay, we got to play sometime." So I went back, and of course, true to form, I played left-handed, and we took the game, you know, we played to 21, which as soon as somebody says they're playing to 21, I know they don't play a lot of ping pong, because, you know, real ping pong's to 11, but that's a whole different story. So when he said to 21, I was like, "Sure, I'm playing left-handed." So we get there, and he ends up beating me, I think, like 31 to 29, like he went to, like, all those deuces, and he's like, "Well, you know, you're almost there." And then I said, "Well, I should also tell you one thing." He said, "What's that?" I said, "I'm not left-handed." And I switch over, and you could see him go, And I do that not just because I'm completely arrogant. I do that because I love the movie Princess Bride, and that's the closest thing I can get to it, if you know what I mean, right? Because there's nothing scarier than a swordsman who takes you toe-to-toe for 25 minutes and then all of a sudden says, "Oh, by the way, I'm not left-handed." Okay, which is what you sort of see here. And I won't tell you how the rest of the games went with Alex, but we had a good time. But we have not played ping pong since that day. I don't know why. I have to ask him if he'll play me again. Gosh, I sound so horrible saying all that. But anyways, moving on. It's just to illustrate the fact that, you know, when it says that they could, you know, wield a sword left-handed or right-handed, okay? These were scary dudes, sort of like in the Old West when you see somebody literally whip out pistols in both hands. I was just listening to a historical novel about some of the great characters of the Wild West. And by the way, did you know that the character Lone Ranger was based on was black? Anybody know that? And he could wield pistols in both hands, which was quite interesting. But instead of you leaving a silver bullet, he would leave a silver dollar, which, so anyways, moving on. But what would scare people is when people saw you whip out pistols in both hands, they'd freak out. Because, you know, here's a guy who can be accurate with both hands. It would strike fear within the hearts of somebody. And so he's talking about these warriors. They were scary dudes. I mean, they could, you know, whip up swords in either hands. They could play offense and defense. They were good with the sword and good with the shield. You ever seen some of those movies where a guy, like, loses a sword, but, like, he goes on the offense with a shield, just starts cracking people off with a shield, you know, almost gladiator style? And then it says they have faces as lions. And so after I've knocked on Alex, I'll tell you the positive on Alex. So there I am, Super Bowl Monday, down in New Zealand, and I'm at this barbecue with a couple of locals, and sort of one of them sort of heard I was a pastor, and just sort of, you sort of get to know like where somebody's spiritual condition is whenever they find out you're a pastor, because you get all kinds of reactions instantly. And some people are like, oh, you're a pastor, tell me more. I love church, I love Jesus, just tell me more, anything you can share. There's some people who are like, oh, you're a pastor? Yeah, you know, okay. And they start going into confession, you know, like they start telling you things. Then there's some people like, here, you're a pastor, and they're like, yeah, okay, you're just going to judge me, just whatever. And they just kind of blow you off the rest of the day. And that's kind of what happened with this one guy there. And so in the midst of all that, we'd watched first half at a local pub, and then we came to watch the second half back at this house where this barbecue was. And so I'm sort of watching the game and talking with him, and I was getting texts from Alex, who was here watching the game live with our Super Bowl party here. Because if you haven't been here, we watch the game on the big screen and have couches in here. It's a good time. And so there's a picture of him and Jonathan both watching the game, and they took a picture of it, and somebody's like, oh, look, you know, they're watching. I was trying to explain them how big of a deal this game is. And so, like, even our whole church is, like, decked out for this thing. And so, anyways, this guy had kind of blown me off earlier, kind of looks over my shoulder to see this picture of these Americans watching this weird game, and he sees these two guys, you know, with full woodland beards. And he was like, who are those guys? I wish I could do a Kiwi accent. I just can't. He's like, who are those guys? And I was like, oh, those are our worship pastors. And he kind of looked at me like, those are pastors at your church with those beards? I said, yeah. And instantly, all of a sudden, there was a bond. And like 2 days later, I was out deer hunting with this guy. It was great. I mean, it was just like, that was like the best part of the whole thing. It's like, because of Alex's beard, I got to go deer hunting. And in the midst of it, like, his mom pulls me aside and says, listen, here's the thing. He's lost. He's been running from God. I think it's a sign from God that you're here and that he's taken a liking to you. Just tell him about Jesus when you're out hunting. Okay. And sure enough, I found some time on the trail around 2 o'clock in the morning just to talk to him about Jesus on the back of a four-wheeler in the middle of the night spotlighting deer, which is perfectly legal in New Zealand, if you know what that is. So, because they're pests. And so I was helping rid the country of some of their pests, which was quite fun. But just the fact that the beards opened the door. You know, and the reason why I love that story is because you have to know the other backstory to it, and that is I've got a good friend of mine that I've known for many, many, many years who serves at a sort of a historically more traditional type of church. I mean, they're modern in their mindset. They're modern, but they're a historically traditional church. They have very traditional values, and every once in a while, you know, we'd be talking about something, and he would, you know, go on our website and look at stuff, and he'd call me and be like, "Hey, man, when you gonna tell those worship leaders on stage to shave those beards, man? I don't know, man. It's because that's for him. That's whole foreign. Like, you know, you're not looking prim and proper if you're up there with a face like a lion. This is where it comes back. You know, these guys with these face like lions. It's kind of scary. It's kind of I don't know. You know, what are people gonna think when they walk into a church and they got that guy up there?" And I was like, "Well, that guy up there led to a great ministry opportunity on the back of a four wheeler just a couple days ago. That guy up there has got an amazing heart for God, and the other guy up there also has an amazing heart for God, and I don't think anybody in our church really cares. As a matter of fact, lots of people in our area have beards. I don't know, maybe just something people you are on. I don't know what it is, or that, or maybe our people just don't care. I don't know, there's like a little bit of everybody up on stage, and it's just kind of who we are as a church." And so what it's basically saying is that these were warriors that would strike fear into the hearts of people, but they also emboldened David. And when I think about the diversity of the people in our church, I just love the fact that what strikes fear in the heart of some people in a more traditional church setting is the very thing that we embrace as a part of our culture, what makes us who we are, which makes us sort of dangerous to this world that doesn't like Jesus. And to somebody who would instantly judge me and be like, oh, you're a pastor, I want nothing to do with you because, you know, you want nothing to do with me because I'm just not like you, and sort of pushes you away. When they see there's something a little different about who we are as a church, because they see your diversity, they go, wait a minute, tell me more about this church that you go to, because this must be different than the one I grew up in. And it says, so they could wield a sword in either hand, and they had faces like lions. And then it says, and they were swift as gazelles in the mountains. If you've ever tried to chase a deer through the woods, which happening to do in New Zealand again, they're pretty darn quick, if you ever notice that. It's almost like as if that's their natural habitat, if you will. Yeah, it's like they were made for that kind of place. But they're able just to jump around, and they'll just jump. I mean, they'll literally jump on like a little rock ledge like this, something that you would like stare at for like a couple minutes to figure out whether or not it could support your weight. the deer will be on and off it in 2 seconds, and they just jump around. And so he's saying these people were very agile and could move. And as a church, that's something we've always sort of had to do, is sort of be agile and swift and be able to move to different environments. And we started off in a school, and then we moved here to this facility, and then we've renovated this facility over and over and over again. And back when Melissa passed away, I remember going to our elders, and I had sort of talked with them about either resigning or sort of what my role should be going forward. I just wasn't sure. And I said, here's the problem that I see, is that churches thrive on stability. People want something sort of predictable and stable when they go to church. And sort of the eyes of the room sort of looked at me and said, what about our church to this point in time has been predictable or stable? I mean, really, it is the sort of the image of unpredictability and instability. I mean, we've had staff that have come and gone. We've had we've moved from location to location. We've barely gone a year without a major renovation on the church, and then now we're a church in two locations. And if you've been over at the other location in Town Center, we continually are revamping and changing the layout of that and the look of that and the format of what we're doing over there over and over and over again. And there's just not been a lot that's been stable. And then you look at my life; it's not been stable at all. I've gone through the time of being single and then dating and now married, and everything is always changing. And the thing about it is that the community is always changing. And when we look to a church to be stable and predictable, the problem is that we expect the stability and predictability out of a church, but we know that the community around us is always changing. And so what do you do when if you force a church to be stable and predictable? What you're doing is basically saying, I want my church to be stable and predictable at the cost of being able to continually reach the community, which is always changing. Because the community changes and the culture changes. Now, we don't change the message, but we might change the delivery. We don't change the content of what we're teaching or the fact that we want to show love, but we may change the way that it's delivered. Does that make sense? And we always want to, as we say in our core values, we want to speak the language. And sometimes the language looks different. Sometimes the music looks different. Sometimes it sounds different. Sometimes it's delivered in a different way. I sort of relish the fact that there are times, I think, when you come in here and you'll watch a intro video and you'll sit there and go, what on earth is that? And it's always hilarious because new people be like, and then whoever like brought them is like, no, trust me. It'll make sense at some point. We're studying the life of David. What does that have to do with David? Trust me, it'll make sense at one point. I'm thinking like through some of my all-time favorites was showing a George Carlin clip on Easter morning. And people were like, Carlin, he's like an atheist who like hates God. Why would you show him on Easter Sunday? And so on and so forth. We would show varying clips. But the point is sort of just to let you know that there's, the Bible isn't quite so archaic and packaged up like you and out of touch that as some people want it to be. It's alive and it's moving and it's accurate and it's where you're at, and it's just a matter of applying it. And so we always want to be able to speak the language to the people around us and be agile enough that if the way we're speaking the language now doesn't connect, that we change our methods or we change the way that we speak or we change the way that we try to reach those people. I love when Paul goes into Athens. Now keep in mind, Paul grew up in a Jewish area. He was a Roman citizen, grew up in a Jewish area, but was also fluent in Greek. And so he's used to preaching to Jews, and he was used to preaching to people out in the countryside in these small towns. Well, he finally comes to Athens. Now, Athens is sort of the mecca of cultural arts. It'd be like going into New York or going into L.A., and he goes into the mecca of all that is cultural and artsy and intelligent and affluent. And he begins to try to speak to them there and try to communicate the gospel to them. And they walk away, and they say, what's this babbler trying to say? In other words, he sounds interesting, but we don't have a clue what he's trying to communicate here because it's not really on our level. He just seems kind of like a bumbling idiot. And so they say, but we want to hear a little bit more on this. And so what's interesting is that he goes from being this sort of babbler in the marketplace, is Acts chapter 17, to then when he goes into the marketplace, he begins to quote their music. He begins to quote their poets. He begins to say, you've got altars all around the city to all these different kinds of gods. I noticed you had this one inscription to an unknown god. That is the god I want to proclaim to you. It'd be like coming to the community and saying, that's interesting. You ever connected with the song where she says, what if God was one of us? I mean, how easy of a connection is that just to say, yeah, God was one of us. God was one of us. He was like a stranger on the bus. And he came to his own, but his own didn't even recognize him. And it's just right there within our culture, within our language, and always want to be a church that speaks the language of our community and is swift and agile enough to change and to move. And that's why we start ministries and kill ministries. That's why we start new programs and kill programs. That's why we have some events and then we don't do those events. And people are like, well, when are we going to do that event again? Well, it was just a one-time event. Well, when are we going to do this again? Well, we did that one time because we were reaching a need. Well, why are you doing this? Who is that going to reach? Well, it's going to reach a people we've never reached before, so we're going to try something different. Well, I don't think a church should be doing that. Well, that's okay, because there's a lot of people who we wouldn't reach and connect with if we didn't go and do that. And so, you know, I've been asked, like, Fight Club, why would you do a Fight Club? Well, I can't really talk about it, but, you know, if you just come sometime, you'll find out why we do Fight Club. It's different. We're trying to reach people that somebody else would not be able to reach. And I was even asked a question recently from somebody. He said, well, describe Essential. Like what church is it like? I don't know. So, well, your speaking style, then just tell me, like who you like. I don't know. I mean, if I try to compare myself to somebody, first of all, I don't think it's going to be anywhere near an accurate comparison. Besides, there's just weird quirks about me that are just different. I don't know. And they said, well, how about the music? What's the music? Well, tell me another church the music is like. Well, it's like I could tell you churches that may sing the same songs, but they're just not the same. I don't know what to tell you. It's just, you know, we don't have smoke and lights and moving heads and things. It's just not like this big stage production kind of thing, but they're amazing and they're more professional and gifted and talented than anybody else I've ever been around, but they're just, it's almost like they're not there on Sunday morning, but they're amazing. How do you describe that kind of thing? And then people say, well, what is it that people like about your church? Like, I don't know. They just sort of connect there. It's I guess it's the people. Everybody says it's the people, but I don't know. Ours is, well, okay. Well, just tell me what I should wear. I don't know. Like, what do you mean you don't know? I said, well, everybody, when you ask them what you should wear, they'll describe what it is they're wearing. Okay, which is all around the board. Look around here. I mean, you got shorts, you got t-shirts, you got ties, you got a little bit of everything in the room. And I said, literally, on any given Sunday, you'll find somebody who's wearing an Essential t-shirt that they ripped the sleeves off of. I don't know where they're at, but anyways, that's happened on a Sunday morning in the lobby. All the way to somebody in a three-piece suit. I can't tell you what it's like. It's just, it's swift, it's agile, we're different. We don't really care. We just accept people where they're at. We want to, you know, love people where they're at. We want to love them just as they are. And we also want to challenge them not to stay that way. And so there's both of those things there. And so these people who gather around David were kind of like that. And says, you know, basically, at the end of the day as a church, our only goal is to be an authentic expression of Jesus Christ in our community. We want to be an authentic expression of Jesus Christ in our community. And Paul would say, I want to become all things to all people so that by all means I might save some. To the Jews, I was like a Jew. To the Greek, I was like a Greek. To those who were free, I was like a free man. To those who were slaves, I was like a slave. I've become all things to all people so that by all means I might win some. And so, yeah, I can't really describe who we are as a church. I'd love to be able to say we are a church for Christians. And if you're a Christian, you grew up in church, we're a great place for you. But we're not. Most people who grew up in church don't stick. They come here, they get healed, and they move on somewhere else. And that's why a couple weeks ago, I had you all stand and said, you know, if you were kind of disconnected from church before you came here, stand up. And if you remember, half the church stood up at that point. Then somebody would say, well, what denomination are you guys? I'm like, well, I'd say we're non-denominational. We're more anti-denominational than anything else. They say, well, who are most of the people in the church? Like if you were to ask the average person, you know, what were the most people, what denominational background do they have? I said, ironically, Catholic. Oh, so you're Catholic then? No, we're not. We do communion every Sunday. That's about as close as we get to dip. And then whenever the Catholics come up, they try to drink out of the cup. And we used to have to like, no, you can't have any. And so like we used to hold the cup. And part of the reason why, you know, we held the cup, which is what the priest does if you've been a Catholic church. And when that happens, the Catholics come in and they, and we're like, no, we don't want that. And so we put it on the table, which sort of removed sort of that I air. Every once in a while, though, we've had somebody, they'll look around like, who's going to, we're like, no, just dip. And that's why Pastor Bob usually says we dip. You might not, you totally take it for granted when he says, you know, tear a piece of bread, you know, you dip in the cup. We say that because that happens. And so they say, okay, well, what are most of the, like your staff, what denomination background are they from? I'm a religious mutt. You name the denomination. I've either been there, been a part of that, or dated a girl, so was a part of that for a while. You know how it is. Like, oh, you're Episcopal? Well, I happen to be Episcopal, too. What church are we going to this Sunday? Come on. You know you've done it. Some of you are here right now because you're with a girl on a date. You know, I go to Essential every week that she's here. So I'm a little bit of everything. I said, but you know, we don't hire from any one denomination. It's pretty across the board. We've had people from churches that speak in tongues and people from churches that don't. We've had Reformed theologians and we've had non-Reformed theologians. I mean, you name it, we've had them on staff. I'm like, well, how does that work? I said, because we focus on the essentials of the faith. We focus on the essentials of the faith. We focus on the one thing that people need to know to get them from this life into the next. We focus on the fact that this life is about nothing more than having a loving relationship with Jesus Christ that you'll enjoy for all eternity. And it just doesn't register with a lot of folks. Like, that's okay. It's not a church for you. It was a church for people who don't go to church, which goes back to my first calling is when I was in Florida State, that wonderful Christian school there in Florida. When I felt the call to ministry, the odd thing was I wasn't going to church, which is really kind of awkward. And I remember I had a hard time with it. I just kept saying, there's no way God's calling me to the ministry. And I said to my sister, like she was like one of the first people I told her, I said, I got this weird feeling God's calling me to be a pastor. It's like, oh, could you imagine? She's like, yeah, I could totally see that. I'm like, no, you can't see that. I said, I don't even go to church. You don't even go to church right now. She says, well, maybe God's calling you to be a pastor to people like you and me who don't really connect in church right now. It's like, huh, maybe so. Maybe that's why so many of you all come from a background that don't go to church or haven't been to church. And if we went over to Town Center, by the way, the numbers were even higher there of people who were not connected to a church before we went there. That's because 7 out of 10 people around that church, around that location, have no connection with God. And by the way, this area is about 6 out of 10. It's not quite 7 out of 10, but it's almost the same ratio of people who are not connected with God. So they were adaptable and fearless, and it says they were also loyal and united. It says, then the spirit of Amasi, the chief of 30, came to him and he said, we are yours, David. We are with you, son of Jesse. Success to you and success to those who help you, for your God will help you. So David received them and made them leaders of his raiding bands. And it goes on down. And then from Zebulun, experienced soldiers prepared for battle with every type of weapon came to help David with undivided loyalty. In verse 38, all these were fighting men who volunteered to serve in the ranks. And they came to Hebron fully determined to make king over all Israel. And the rest of all the Israelites were also of one mind to make David king. What's interesting is that when people come together, is if you notice there was kind of an interesting thing there. On the one hand, they said, David, we're one with you. But then also what you see is they were one of one mind together. And it wasn't just a unity around, you know, their loyalty to David or their allegiance to David. It was a unity and loyalty and allegiance to everybody in the entire group. And it's sort of like with Christianity, with God. It's like you would think that God wants to make Christians loyal to him. Like our loyalty is to God. And so we are this sort of collective individuals who come together who have an allegiance to God. And that's not at all what the church was or was ever supposed to be. And sometimes we make that to be what church is all about for us. We jump around from church to church to church. We go to churches and tell each church what you got to do to meet my needs because this is what I want. This is what I need right now. And because my allegiance is to God. And so your job as a church is sort of to help me in my relationship with God so I can attain some sort of enlightenment with him. And I'm always like, are you some sort of like Christian Buddhist who's chasing after individual enlightenment or something along the way? What is this here? Because the church was never supposed to be this individualistic group where a pastor comes and sort of teaches you a little bit deeper to what you already know. Like they'll come to me and say, well, here's where I'm at in my faith. Here's what you need to teach me now. Oh, okay, well, I'll take that into consideration. Then they'll go to Pastor Alex and say, Pastor Alex, at my last church, here was a list of songs that really helped me connect with God. So you need to work those in. Alex says, all right, we'll take that into consideration. And so on down the line. We do consider it. If there's something there that we look and say, okay, yes, what you're saying is something we're seeing is a need for everybody in the church and where we're going, but we're not catering ministry to you. I'm not a big Walking Dead fan, but I know many of you all are. I have no moral issues against the show or anything like that. I've heard there's issues with it, but I found something fascinating though when somebody was explaining to me sort of one of the concepts of the show, and that there's strength in numbers when it comes to the sort of the premise of the show. And if there's somebody out there who wants to join a tribe or a group of people in the show, they always want to know, what can you do for us? What skill do you have? In other words, what benefit are you going to bring if you join us? Because they don't want to just carry on dead weight, just somebody who's going to suck down resources. They want to know what you can do. And said, but also you got to be wary of a group or a band of people or a tribe of people who don't ask anything of you. Because they don't ask anything of you, there's one of two things going on there. Either they don't trust you and they think you're a traitor, or they're preparing to eat you. And you think about that in the realm of church. You know, I say be wary of a church that is not going to ask anything of you. Either they don't trust you or they're going to eat you in some way, shape, or form. I don't know what that means church-wise, but some of you feel like you've been eaten up, chewed up, and spit out by churches. You know, what you want is a church that looks to you and just simply says, in what way are you going to play an essential part in what God's doing in the world? Through the local church, because the local church is what he's working through. And so the people came together and they said, David, we're loyal to you. We want to see you succeed because your success is our success. We know that God is behind this and he's in this and we're united in one mind. And then it goes on. I'm kind of short for time. So he says, it goes on and it says, David received them and made them leaders of raiding bands. He didn't just say, okay, come on in, fall in line, you be my loyal subjects. No, he says, I'm going to make you leaders of these groups. And if you come and you're part of Essential, we say you don't join the church, so to speak. You join a small group where you can have that sense of unity, where you're tracking through life and that your success is my success. And we want to make sure that, you know, the people who are members of the group are succeeding in life. And that's what about being a small group is all about. And then service teams are all about you finding a place of not just service, but also leadership. When you start to serve, you're a part of what we call a leadership pipeline. We don't want you just to come in and just be parking cars for the rest of your life. But, you know, is there some other skill that God's put within you? Do you have ability to hold two swords, you know, one in each hand? Do you have some other ability to connect? We want to move you from parking cars. No, there's nothing wrong with parking cars, by the way. Move you from that point all the way up to someday where you're leading youth group. You know, you're leading Bible studies. That we hope that, you know, you'd be moving through these ranks of responsibility just as David would have. I'm just going to cut down to the end. So it says, they spent there 3 days there with David, eating and drinking. Their families had supplied provisions for them, and they, also their neighbors, as far as away from Issachar and Zebulun and Naphtali, came bringing food and donkeys and camels and mules and oxen, and there were plentiful supplies of flour and fig cakes and raisins and wine and olive oil and cattle and sheep, and there was joy in Israel. And so these people that came around that were a part of David's group that moved him from being shepherd king to or shepherd boy to being king over all Israel. They were people who came that were fearless and they were adaptable. They were loyal and they were unified, but they were also generous and joyful. And they came together with great joy and they just gave. And they said, we want to be a part of this and whatever it takes to resource this. And as you look around as a church, if you want to see God do something amazing in your city, if you want to see him continue the work he already has, that's what we've been talking about. You know, with David, he had a heart for the house because what launched him into this position, people had that same heart for the house. You know, David's heart for the house, you see at the very end of his life, began with these people who came around him and said, David, I want to see you succeed. I want to see this movement that God's put inside you succeed. And so we're going to give our lives to that. We're going to give our spirits to that. And we're a ragtag bunch, but that's okay because it's a ragtag world that we're going out into. There's a need to be fearless and need to be adaptable, but we're going to give generously and joyfully, and we're all together in one heart and one mind. And so before you go off thinking that the church is about any one person or any one ministry or any one thing, you have to understand that the church, just like David's kingdom, was about a group of people that came together to make it into something that God ultimately wanted it to be. Would you join with me as we pray? Father, as I think about where you've brought us as a church and the roads we've been through, the ups and the downs, the highs and the lows. Essential has always been more about more than just one person or one ministry. It's been a group of people who've given themselves to the cause. About people who showed up hours ago to help set things up. About people who'll be here for hours more today to continue that work. It's about people who are up here on Wednesday delivering food. It's about people who were up here last week taking clothing to the homeless. Father, what makes a church so special, Father, is a group of so many different people from all different walks of life using the gifts and abilities that you've given them for your glory, for your service, for your honor. Father, is there anything keeping us from making that next step of commitment and moving closer to you and becoming more useful and more essential to your service? May we surrender that, Father, to you today. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thank you for listening to the Essential Church Podcast. Let me encourage you to pause for a moment and reflect on what you've heard. It's not the hearing of the word, but the application that makes all the difference.